This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Matt and Patrick here today. Brett will stop on by in a little bit here. We'll do some chatting about some things. It's gorgeous outside. If you haven't had the chance, I mean, it's warmer than it should be, but it's melting and fast out there. It was, I walked the dog this morning. It was kind of chilly. And things have, that wind came in and, you know, it's looking nice out there. So if you're heading out, enjoy that. It's going to be like that basically for the next 2 weeks. It's going to be like this, and it's going to be in the 50s as well. I'm going to crack the bike out here before too much longer.
I saw a 60 for next Tuesday, and all that's a ways out.
Wow.
So it may not stick, but I did see a 60.
I did not see that 60. Wow. All right. How lucky are you, Patrick? Do you consider yourself a lucky person?
Absolutely, yes.
You're not as lucky as these guys are. Two men had lucky escapes in Stearns County on Monday when the gas trucks they were driving crashed at an intersection. The collision happened on County 34 and Lakewood Road, about 7 miles east of Painesville at 2:45 yesterday, with Stearns County deputies arriving to find a Lakes Gas propane truck tipped on its side with significant damage to the front side of the truck. In a ditch about 50 yards from the intersection was a Painesville Co-op gas truck it had collided with. The Painesville gas truck driver, a 64-year-old local man, told deputies he was westbound on 34 when he saw the Lakes gas truck approaching the intersection heading north on Lakewood Road. The Lakes gas truck slowly entered the intersection where it collided with the driver's side of the Painesville truck, forcing it into the ditch. Fortunately, the driver was able to keep on his wheels. The Lakes driver, so you got two gas trucks crashing, and none of them, they didn't explode, they didn't blow up. This story could have been horrific. And you think about that. Sign of the Lenten season, indeed, as my Catholic host here says, in the Lenten season, indeed. The Lakes gas driver, a 69-year-old man from Albany, told the police he didn't notice the westbound truck. You think? And by the way, if you don't see a gas truck, 69, you know, it's a good time. Retire time. Head on. You know, you can get in retirement. Shouldn't be driving gas trucks. I'm going to just going to say it. Minor injuries were treated on the scene. A number of appropriate agencies were also called out for evaluation of the crash scene due to the potential for spillage and hazardous materials. Well done. So there you go. If you're looking for good news today, and there's a lot of today. If you're looking for good news, there it is. Two gas trucks crashed in Stearns County together, and neither of them blew up and created a much worse mess. So yay. 952-946-6205. I've got to put this story out. There are times where I feel as if there is a responsibility. I was not going to mention this story. And then the more I thought about it, I said, I'd better get the story out at the top of the show. And I might actually repeat it later on. This is a story out of USA Today. It's an important one. Rhonda Bromwell had never used a flea or tick collar before. Pierre, her 9-year-old Papillion service dog, was mostly an indoor animal. The veterinarian recommended she purchase one, so Bromwell went to the pet store near her home in Somerset, New Jersey, and selected Bear's Seresto collar. Seresto is S-E-R-E-S-T-O. This is going to be very important, okay? A day later, on June 2nd, 2020, Pierre had a seizure, collapsing while Bromwell was making dinner. Lying on his back, the dog stopped breathing and his eyes rolled back. Bromwell tried giving him CPR. Then she called the police. An officer helped her lift the dog into her car, and she rushed him to the hospital. Pierre died before they could receive medical treatment, though Bromwell didn't think to take off Pierre's collar. I just didn't put it together, she said. Bromwell isn't alone. Seresto, one of the most popular flea and tick collars in the country, has been linked to hundreds of pet deaths, tens of thousands of injured animals, and hundreds of harmed humans. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency documents show. Yet the EPA has done nothing to inform the public of the risks. Seresto, developed by Bayer and now sold by Elanco, works by releasing small amounts of pesticide onto the animal for months at a time. The pesticide is supposed to kill fleas, ticks, and other pests, but be safe for cats and dogs. But thousands of pets are being harmed, according to federal documents obtained through a public records request from the Center of Biological Diversity, a nonprofit organization that watchdogs the EPA as part of its work to protect endangered species. The center provided the documents to the Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting since Seresto's flea and tick collars were introduced in 2012. The EPA has received incident reports of at least 1,698 related pet deaths. That's since from 2012. So time for Matt's Math Corner here. 1 second. So that's what, 9 years? 1,698 divided by, well, it's not even nine. We're into 8 years. We haven't even really started this one. That's 212 pet deaths a year. That's almost one, you know, two every 3 days. That's two every 3 days. Overall, through June 2020, the agency has received more than 75,000 incident reports related to the collars, including nearly 1,000 involving human harm. Dear Lord. 75,000 incident reports, 1,000 injured humans. Has we had anyone, a human, die from these things? They're clearly not safe. At least, you know, judging by what's being told here by the USA Today story, but once again, this is getting information from the Freedom of Information Request stuff. The EPA is in charge of regulating products that contain pesticides. The agency has known about these incidents for years, but has not informed the public of the potential risk associated with the product, says Karen McCormick, a retired EPA employee who worked as both a scientist and communication officer. McCormick said the collars have the most incidence of any pesticide pet product she's ever seen. The EPA appears to be, and by the way, that's what pet collars do. They're supposed to release a regular stream of pesticides, basically, that are damaging, that are harmful enough for the pet, but not for the fleas and ticks, but not harmful enough for the pet. That's what they're supposed to do. It would seem to me these are just a little miscalibrated, for goodness sakes. They have not informed the public of the potential risks associated with the product, said Karen McCormick, the retired EPA employee who worked as both a scientist and communication officer. McCormick says the collars have the most incidence of any pesticide product she's ever seen. The EPA appears to be turning a blind eye to this problem. And after 7 years of an increasing number of incidents, they are telling the public that they are continuing to monitor the situation, she said. But I think this is a significant problem that needs to be addressed sooner rather than later. The EPA declined to say how Seresto, S-E-R-E-S-T-O. If you got a pet and they've got a flea collar on, check it if it's a Seresto one, because my suggestion is to take it off them immediately and to not leave it around. I mean, it sounds like these things are dangerous. EPA declined to say how Seresto compares to other pet products, but in response to a question about whether the product is safe, an agency spokesperson said in an emailed statement that the two pesticides in Seresto have been found eligible for continued registration based on best available science, including incident data. No pesticide is completely without harm, but EPA ensures there are measures on the product label that reduce risk. Well, in the case of the first woman, it sounds like all she did was put the collar on the pet and it killed him. The product label is the law and applicators must follow label instructions. Some pets, however, like some humans, are more sensitive than others to and may experience adverse symptoms after treatment. Amazon, where Seresto is the top-selling collar. Wow, uh-oh. Also has received numerous complaints about the product from customers who detailed significant issues. Dozens of people over the years have claimed the collar caused skin rashes in their pet. Others said it led to neurological issues in their pets. Despite the many warnings, Amazon has not removed the product from its online marketplace. Amazon did not respond to multiple requests for comment on the story. Pet collars are big business. In its 2019 annual report, German agribusiness and pharmaceutical company Bayer reported revenue of more than $300 million on Seresto alone. $300 million on the pet collars alone. The company sold the animal health division to Elanco Animal Health, a former subsidiary of Eli Lilly, for $7.6 billion in 2019. The deal was finalized in 2020. As part of the deal, Bayer received a $2.3 billion in Elanco stock, which the company said it would sell over time. I'm guessing they're selling that today. Hey, who wants some stock before this one bottoms out? Bayer did not respond to multiple requests for comments. So, wow. You know, can I point out one element of this story, which I don't think is a coincidence? I don't think it's a coinkydink. The fact that Bayer sold this product to a subsidy, to another company. And then after that, we find out about, oh my God, this is really bad. And by the way, there almost seems to be this belligerent mentality at the EPA on this. I mean, the EPA is criticized. Well, I mean, this is a reminder. We're still probably dealing with Trump's EPA at this point, I guess. But the EPA is criticized for being too intrusive. Here's a case where, 1,700 dead pets? What you gonna do? I don't know. Take the product off the market? Holy crud. That's 1,700 pet deaths. And once again, this is out of the story from USA Today. The EPA received incident reports of at least 1,700. That doesn't include the many people who, I don't know, might have bought a dog collar, a flea collar for their beloved pet, put it on them, and then all of a sudden, 4 days later, Sparky was sick and died. And then it never crossed their mind. It might be the flea collar that they put to keep the fleas off of them. That might have been the culprit. Dear Lord. I mean, if you think about it, we could be talking about a lot more pet deaths that just were not reported. Holy cow. 75,000 incident reports related to the collars. And that's, once again, so pets getting sick, pets having neurological problems, pets having rashes, and at least 1,000 involving humans. And okay, so how many pets, people have pets, and then how many people have pets that will need a flea collar, and how many of those people will buy this exact flea collar? So when you start working the numbers backwards a little bit, how is this product still on the market? If this story is true, if the USA Today story is true, how in the world is this product still on the market? Oh, Trump's EPA. Ask a stupid question. I don't think it's so much a coincidence that the right after Bayer sells this company, you know, the product to another company to produce, all of a sudden we found out there's all sorts of problems with it. Because these large corporations, the incestuous nature of the regulatory industries, the regulatory agencies, and these companies is unbelievable. And frankly, you know, as a lot of people criticize people like Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren's actually the person you want in the case of finance to be in charge of financial issues. And the reason why is because she has no, she'll be able to look at that and not try to factor executive bonuses as their first priority when it comes to financial matters. When you look at this, when you look at someone regulating this, this should not be someone who has a tie in any way to the Bayer company or the other company here that Elanco, if they've got any connection to them, those are the last people that should be involved in regulating this. And the reason why is because they've got money in the game. Because I guarantee you, if you're getting up to that level where you are someone who is on a regulatory agency and you've got a wife that's on a advisory board or a kid who's a senior manager, I guarantee you there's stock market, the options, and there's all this stuff that goes around. And the EPA needs to come on out today and, if this is true, explain how in the world they did not pull this product immediately. I mean, we're Minnesota. We love our dogs. We have a lot of dogs here in this state. I've got a dog. A lot of the people who I've worked with here have had dogs. Nancy used to bring her Great Danes in here, and dear Lord, did that freak me out every once in a while. Whoa, that dog is as tall as me. It was a sweetheart, though. It was a sweet dog. But you've got a definitive problem here. And I just think out of safety, I mean, if, once again, I'm going to just say it, if this USA Today story is true, I'm going to make the suggestion, a strong suggestion, to immediately pull the Bear Seresto collar off your dog and find a replacement. Immediately. And do not just leave that on the counter. I would put it in a bag. I would put it, I don't know what you'd do with it. It sounds like it's a toxic thing. I'd get rid of it. I would maybe talk to your vet and say, what should I do with this thing? Or call your veterinarian. But I am, I, you know, if this USA Today story is true, my suggestion would be when you get home today, make a swing on by the pet store, pick up a different pet collar. If your pet has a Bears Seresto, or once again, it's a Elanco, right? Is it? It's Elanco makes it now. Elanco, E-L-A-N-C-O. Of course, Bayer, B-A-Y-E-R. And the name of the product is Seresto, S-E-R-E-S-T-O. If you got that, I would highly suggest not putting it on your pet or taking it off them immediately. And if your pet has had rash problems, if your pet has had neurologic problems, if your pet's been having some health conditions and you've had one of those collars on, I would contact your veterinarian immediately. Immediately. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. You know what? As much as we used to give crud to the USA Today, lately, the USA Today has actually been doing a pretty good job, so I'm impressed. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's Dr. Seuss time. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Once again, the name of that product is Seresto. It was made originally by Bayer. It is now marketed by a different company, Elanco, E-L-A-N-C-O. If going off the USA Today story, if this is true, my strong suggestion is take these things off your pets immediately. If your pet's having health problems, contact your local vet and be careful yourself because other humans are having problems with these as well. So, you know, you want to be careful out there. 952-946-6205. So let's talk once again about cancel culture. What is cancel culture? Cancel culture is a catchphrase that it basically holds two different parameters. One is when we talked about the woman that was on The Mandalorian, Gina Carano, who is on that show, who posted that as a conservative, she is treated worse than the Jews were in Nazi Germany. All right. It's such an insensitive and stupid comment that she immediately was fired by not Disney, LucasArts, who runs Mandalorian. And has been trying to play the victim ever since. And that it's cancel culture. And basically, cancel culture is the most modern version of this term. For many years, it was the PC police. And you know why they don't say the PC police? Is because the boo-boo kitty little snowflake conservatives. Boo-boo kitty. Woohoo. They basically kept screaming PC police because every time those freaking idiots opened their mouth, they'd say something so offensive that even they had to acknowledge, oh, I say PC police a lot, right? It's trying to dismiss legitimate criticism of ignorant things conservatives say by just kind of alluding to some sort of mythical force. It's cancel culture. It's the PC police. No, it's just you're a jackass. You say stupid things, and people. And what you really want is you want freedom from criticism, and that is not something guaranteed in this country. Not at all. Trust me, I know this. Patrick, how many I Hate Matt emails do we have so far today? We have to 6, 7?
812.
A light day. Thanks, Tuesday. You do not have the right to freedom from criticism. And this is whenever it's tied into when they scream about, like, they're trying to take my First Amendment rights as they scream their opinion on a TV network. What they're really screaming is, I'm saying something so outrageous, I get upset when you guys point out that I'm lying or I'm making it up or I'm just crazy. So there's the one side of it. But there is always this other side, which conservatives try to create a mainstream version of cancel culture with something else. Under the guise being is that by saying that was cancel culture and it was something like Goya beans. Oh, you know, the president of Goya comes out and says Trump is still president. And for some reason, cancel culture doesn't want to buy their beans anymore. Well, no, I'm not going to buy a product from a loon ball, for God's sakes. That's just, you think I'm going to buy Goya product anymore? Come on, please. No, done. Bye. So long. And you got your political point of view, and that's right. You have your freedom of speech. That guy's freedom of speech was perfectly valid. You know, he can say what he wants, but there is you don't have freedom from criticism. But by trying to turn Goya, which is just a product you see on the shelves, that's what you mean by mainstream. It's just something that people see, many people will have eaten over the years, that they just, look at this. Now they're just going after canned beans. Cancel culture. So you get it. Now it's basically people who are knowing they're saying stuff that's really horrible, but they can't. And I don't know why conservatives are so broken on the inside. I don't. You would think that if you screwed up, you'd say, hey, you know what? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. The other day, I had a person get upset with something I'd said on the air, and she said, I think your tone was off, and I don't think I said anything wrong, but she said, I feel your tone was bad. And I said, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. If my tone upset you, I apologize. It doesn't make me weak to say that to someone. As a matter of fact, it makes me kind of a decent human being. But for some reason, conservatives have to sit there and say, my daddy told me never to say I'm sorry, and I never will. I never will. And then all of a sudden they're caught really in a crime. And it's like, I'm so sorry. Take a look at all these clowns that are over in the January 6th riot. Look at the terrorists that stormed the Capitol. Oh, they were talking big talk, weren't they? And now all of a sudden they're going to jail. A lot of them are going to jail for a few years at least. And now all of a sudden I'm really sorry. Well, no, maybe you should have had a little bit of the ability to say I'm sorry earlier in your life before you got to treason as your standard bearer of when you finally get over daddy's bad teachings and say I'm sorry. I don't know, but cancel culture is a term that is, like I said, it's the modern version of PC police. It's basically to prevent people from having to apologizing for saying something ignorant, stupid, or just making up a lie. And they desperately, so they can feel as if they're validated. That like an Alex Jones or something like that is validated by dismissing his cancer culture. They'll try to find mainstream stuff to label us, well, look at, it's more cancel culture. You remember when I compared Republicans to Jews in Nazi Germany? This is the same thing, so I'm validated. That's what they try to do. Get it? Gonna take a break. When I come on back, it doesn't matter. The story doesn't have to be true. These people will make up anything. Dr. Seuss is where the conservatives are screaming cancel culture now. We'll talk about that when I come back. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Spiritual work, spiritual war, spiritual people, spiritual law. Hey, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. So, Dr. Seuss. It is remarkable how today the Republican Party went off the freaking rails in regards to Dr. Seuss. Now, mind you, is Aaron Rupar posted on Twitter, which I thought was kind of interesting. It's a pretty remarkable how much the Republicans were ignoring of the testimony by the FBI director in regards to the people that attacked the Capitol to basically push the entire day. Cancel culture is gone after Dr. Seuss. And once again, what are we doing here? Republicans who can't apologize for their ignorant, stupid, or made-up lies basically scream cancel culture, even though they know they're out on the outer fringe. By screaming about Dr. Seuss being part of cancel culture, then they try to legitimize their stupidity and say anyone who criticized me was wrong to try to cancel me. And that's what they try to do. All right. Now, if you didn't pay attention, there's two elements to this cancel culture story. The first one involves Dr. Seuss Enterprises. Okay, this is not, you know, the Rosie O'Donnell Liberal Abortion Network. No! It's Dr. Seuss Enterprises. This is the organization that carries on Dr. Seuss's legacy. So this is his own organization. I think Tolkien's got one, if I'm not mistaken. You know, that J.R.R. Tolkien has got an association, an organization. I think, actually, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle has an official organization to prevent people from just willy-nilly attaching Sherlock Holmes to anything. So this is a common thing, that they have an organization that basically makes sure they're looking out for the best interests of the author's works. All right, not letting them become, you know, Dr. Holmes kids, you know, like Muppet babies, you know. don't give Peter Jackson any more ideas about Hobbit movies. My God, the Hobbit should have been two. That should have been end of story. Anyway, so the Dr. Seuss people have the Dr. Seuss Enterprise. Some of these books are being retired after decades of criticism over racist imagery in the illustrated children's stories. So there has been, and if you don't know, Dr. Seuss, Theodore Seuss Geisel, he was born in Springfield, Mass, 1904. He has a bit of a past with racism and some of the things that he did do, and I'll get to that here in a second. But needless to say, people were critical of these books. And so all these people are up in arms. They're canceling Dr. Seuss. Now, Patrick, I'm just going to ask off the top of your head. Can you think of a Dr. Seuss book? Just any book off the top of your head.
Quite a few.
Okay, give me one.
Cat in the Hat, Green Eggs and Ham.
The Grinch.
The Grinch.
Yep. You know, there are a lot of books that he has. So you're saying to yourself, wow, which one of the quote-unquote Dr. Seuss classics are now being shut down, not by mobs with pitchforks and torches, but the author's own organization that oversees his own product? If you've actually read any of these, Patrick, let me know, okay? Here are the books. And I think that I saw it on Mulberry Street. If I Ran the Zoo, McElligot's Pool, On Beyond Zebra, Scrambled Egg Super, and The Cat's Quizzer. Have you read or even heard of any of those?
I read the list. I kind of vaguely remember reading the If I Ran the Zoo, but I can't be certain about that. Otherwise, I'm like, I have no idea what any of those are.
So what you've got here is it's not Cat in the Hat. It's not The Grinch. It's not, you know, Green Eggs and Ham. It's not one of what we consider to be the classic Dr. Seuss books. It's a bunch of also-ran books, which even the Dr. Seuss organization is realizing, yeah, they got some racist problems here, and they are retiring the books. They are not going to print them anymore. This isn't, you know, Keith Olbermann leading a mob to the doors. No, they themselves decided to do this. But because, what did the Republicans do today? They tried to turn this into they're being forced. No, they're not. They're doing it on their own. This is their decision. The story from the Daily News came on out and said, no, this is their call. Ceasing sales of these books is the only part of our commitment to our broader plan to ensure Dr. Seuss's Enterprises catalog represents and supports all communities and families. So is it cancel culture if the company themselves, the Dr. Seuss people themselves, decide to not put forward the book anymore? Because it seems like that's not canceling. That's just them making a business decision. But it's not just that. There was another point here that they said, there's a scholastic, a banned Dr. Seuss. I can't believe it. And cancel culture out of control. Well, once again, they're just making this crap up. Charlotte Clymer, who is on Twitter, did a fairly impressive background search on this and has found out a lot of information. I heard Dr. Seuss books were banned in a Virginia school district, which surprised me. So I did what any reasonable adult would do with internet access. I looked it up to get the official details. There's this remarkable tool for VeriClient claims that isn't yet more widely known. It's completely free. You don't have to sign up with an email subscription. It's called Google. So I went to Google and typed in Dr. Seuss banned Virginia to see what I could find out. That brought me to a CNN article written about the banning that led to this paragraph stating, and I'm going to read this paragraph for you here. A school district in Virginia recently made headlines by allegedly banning books by Dr. Seuss, but Loudoun County Public Schools, located in Ashburn, said it is not banning books by the famous children's author. It's just discouraging in connection between Read Across America Day, which was created to get kids excited about reading, and Dr. Seuss's birthday. Both fall on March 2nd and have often been historically connected to one another, the district said in a statement. Okay. That seems to be relatively straightforward. So nothing's getting canceled. They're just basically making sure they are focusing on the Read Across America Day as opposed to Dr. Seuss's birthday. Students can still check them out as freely as they did yesterday. They're not removed. They're on the shelves. So in this school library, there hasn't been any banning of Dr. Seuss. They're still there. As a matter of fact, she did say, well, maybe CNN is making this up. Misreporting the actions of local government led by the people. The best kind of government, social services, conservatives tell us. So I went to the Google and typed in Loudoun County Public Schools and clicked on it. And here it is. Media rumors concerning LCPS and Dr. Seuss. During the past 24 hours, a media rumor has circulated that Loudoun County Public Schools has banned books written by Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss books have not been banned by Loudoun County Public Schools. LCPS believes this rumor has started because March 2nd is Read Across America Day. Schools in LCPS and across the country have historically connected Read Across America Day with Dr. Seuss's birthday. Research in recent years has revealed strong racial undertones in many books written and illustrated by Dr. Seuss. Examples include anti-Japanese American political cartoons and cartoons depicting African Americans for sale captioned with offensive language. Give us this research and LCPS's focus on equity and cultural responsible instruction. LCPS provided this guidance to schools during the past couple of years to not connect Read Across America Day exclusively with Dr. Seuss's birthday. We continue to encourage young readers to read all types of books that are inclusive, diverse, and reflective of our student community, not simply celebrate Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss books have not been banned and are available to students in our libraries and classrooms. However, Dr. Seuss and his books are no longer the emphasis of Read Across America Day in Loudoun County Public Schools. So, today, let's go through this. Today, we have had, on one side, Republicans screaming, Dr. Seuss, cancel culture, got Dr. Seuss. And on the reality side, and once again, why are they screaming this? Is because when they make stupid comparisons to how they're persecuted like the Jews in Nazi Germany, when they make stupid comparisons that basically will, you know, dox a fellow politician because they feel as if they're not being, their bill shouldn't get passed automatically for some reason, whatever the case may be, it's fools like this will scream cancel culture on mainstream things. And then insist that basically the cancel culture that they got, which once again is just made up by them, is legitimate because they went after Goya Beans. They went after Dr. Seuss. They came after me. What's next? So they made this up. The reality is one, the Dr. Seuss people themselves decided to retire six pretty much unheard of Dr. Seuss books. I got three kids. We pulled out, I think we read every book in that library. For goodness sakes, I don't remember any of those books. So not exactly the top of the catalog here. On top of that, this school district has not banned the books. It just is, we won't want to feature it as part of this, Read Across America Day. It's that Dr. Seuss is his birthday. There's a lot of people that are born on March 2nd. It's just today's Read Across America, and it's about all books, not just Dr. Seuss books. But the books are still available in the school libraries. The books can still get checked out. But, you know, Charlotte Clymer goes on here. What are racial undertones, someone might ask, because it doesn't really commit to a definitive framing on the claim of harm of something blatantly racist. So I went to Google and typed Dr. Seuss racism and found multiple stories. Because it centers on annual commemoration on reading and literacy, I took the time to read the study written by two researchers who went through Dr. Seuss's entire catalog out of curiosity. You can read the full study here. You can, by the way, find the link to this on my Twitter feed, Matt McNeil Show, at Matt McNeil Show. They point out, before and during his career publishing children's books, Dr. Seuss also published hundreds of racist political cartoons, comics, and advertisements for newspapers, magazines, companies, and the United States government. The authors asked, our study sought to evaluate the claims that his children's books are anti-racist and was shaped by the research question, how and what extent are non-white characters depicted in Dr. Seuss's children's books? I won't spoil the ending for you, but it's clear that even Dr. Seuss's more evolved days, he still had some issues with racist depictions in kids' books. I don't know, maybe someone can, you know, really can evolve significantly and still not quite be where they should. Given the clear evidence that Dr. Seuss kids' books still use racist depictions, and even though they're not obvious to white people like me, maybe continuing to tout them as gold standard for anti-racism in early childhood education isn't the best way to go here. So Loudoun County Public Schools kept the books, still display them, still allow kids to check them out, but simply don't want to hold them up as the central gateway to childhood literacy because of demonstrable racist depictions. Seems somewhat reasonable. But wait, there are some schools that have banned books. And this is, by the way, where Charlotte Clymer basically is almost like a hero to me in this. She makes the point of this, that cancel culture actually does exist. It does. But it doesn't have to do with conservatives getting persecuted or Dr. Seuss. It's that conservatives have been trying to ban numerous books for years in public schools. The most recent year, which they have data, 2019, 10 books most challenged and banned, 8 of them were solely because of LGBTQ themes. So the same people, pretty much the same exact people who've been screaming all day about a banning of Dr. Seuss books, which has just not happened, they themselves have been trying to get books banned, many of them, I shouldn't say all of them, many of them, have been working very hard to get Dr. Seuss books, but other books that have to deal with LGBTQ themes banned from schools. Oh, and Harry Potter books. And they've gone after Harry Potter books because that wizarding, that's the devil's work. That's cancel culture. Funny story. Still allowing kids to get the books in the school, still displaying the books in the school, that's not canceled. That's a library. making the decision that one author should not be the only sole person featured in an annual Get the Kids Reading Day, that's probably a good idea because there's a lot of great authors out there. But what is cancel culture is right-wing bigots out there saying, get that book about LGBTQ issues out of my kids' school. We can't allow them to see that. We can't allow them to see Harry Potter books. That's the devil's work. That is cancel culture. But funny story. All these people that scream, isn't it right and just that we're preserving American values, and I'm going to use that in air quotes, when they try to ban LGBTQ books. Funny, they don't consider that cancel culture. They don't. Funny. You're not being canceled, you boo-boo kitty little snowflakes. Stop. You're just trying to make up an outrage, a canceling, and a myth at this point. Not because it really exists, but because the other stupid stuff you guys have said that you have gotten legitimately criticized for, you're trying to downplay by saying, well, sure, they came after me because I was, you know, saying Nazis were right, but that was just cancel culture like they went after Dr. Seuss. You're pathetic. You're all pathetic. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And scene. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Caller calling in. Patrick, I think he was right when The Lorax came on out, which is basically an anti-logging book. It's an anti-save nature. It's a save nature book. I believe conservative groups on the West Coast tried to get that book banned. Funny, I don't ever remember the conservatives screaming PC police or cancel culture with that Dr. Seuss book getting banned. I don't ever remember that. It almost is like these people are pathetic losers that just basically what they want is they want freedom from criticism. There's a story I got coming up here. As a matter of fact, do I have time to get to this? I might have time to get to this. No, I'll tell you what, I'll save it. There is just an element of the white male-dominated Republican Party, the old white male-dominated Republican Party, who wants to go back to the days and age where they can smack their secretary on the butt, talk about how, I bet you're good at sex, that sort of thing, that can get around groups of white people and you know, freely say they're you know, racist words, or not even around white people. They can be out in the street and they can use the N word, or they can use the W word, or use the F word, you know, for a GLBTQ community. And they want to be able to go back to that and say, you know, so I said it. It's not that bad. You know, I'm sorry you heard it, but I should be able to say it. Which is, once again, they just don't see the dominance level of a culture that tolerates crap like that. They don't. And they, you know, and we just, for God's sakes, we just got rid of the name of the Washington football team. Because a bunch of white guys sat there and said, well, there's tradition here. Your, what, 60 or 70 years of football team naming tradition does not overstep the thousands of years of Native American tradition. For goodness sakes, you ignorant asses. Seriously. But this is what they really want. They want to scream the N-word. They want to say, you're dang right. They want to be... For lack of a better way to say it, they want to be as brazen as the White South was at the beginning of the Civil War, where they basically said, damn right we're the superior race. That's what they want to say. That's what they want to do. That's what they and any time anyone points out, you shouldn't be doing that, that's when they're like, it's cancel culture. And let's face it, let's go back to Gina Carano. Why was she saying that how conservatives get treated today is like Jews in Nazi Germany? Because she honestly thinks that someone telling her, wow, that's a stupid point of view, which is freedom of speech. People can tell you that. If by people pointing out the faults in your argument, the lies that you're telling, the ignorance that you're spewing, that hurt their feelings, that they convey that to, like, that we're all supposed to just sit there and take it. Because that's really the world they want. They want the world, like I said, white South right before the Civil War. They want to scream whatever they want. They want to do whatever they want. They don't want to do these things. And they want everyone else to just like it. Yeah, you can't do anything about it. They're just pathetic. They are. They're just pathetic. And when you look at the depth of brokenness that is here, it's this, you know, the inability to say, well, first of all, the inability to use your brain and say to yourself, well, maybe I shouldn't say such racist things. Maybe I shouldn't say such intolerant things. Maybe I shouldn't say such misogynist things. Maybe I shouldn't say such bigoted things. For God's sakes, we just had a congresswoman talk about giant Jewish space lasers starting forest fires. But you go and criticize them, and they just, you're just supposed to sit there and attack it. You're not supposed to say anything back to me about how stupid I sound. Cancel culture. That's where we're at right now. That is America today. And this whole thing with the Dr. Seuss, it's just, once again, they're lying. They're making it up because they're trying to find something more mainstream that they can attach themselves to validate their stupidity. Don't let them do it. Challenge them all evening long. They need it. We'll take a break. Come on back. Hour two up next. Patrick, you went to the Matt McNeil School of Pronunciation. Oh, gosh. There's a tomato washing in Missouri. I mean, a tornado warning in Missouri. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Brett Johnson stepping in studio here. Hi, Brett.
Hey, Matt. How's it going?
It's going well. I did want to, first of all, revisit a quick story here in regards to something we brought. This is a story from USA Today about specific pet collars. These are flea and tick collars that apparently are fairly dangerous. There has been a total of 1,698 pet-related deaths to this collar, 75,000 incident reports of injuries to pets with this, 1,000 injuries to humans with these collars, and they're one of the most popular ones you can get. This is, then once again, this is the USA Today story. I'm not sure really how much of this is, you know, I'm going with what they say. They've got this from Freedom of Information Request stuff. But it's Seresto, Seresto. It's developed by Bayer. It's now sold by Elanco, Elanco. And so that is Seresto. If this story is anything true, my high recommendation for you is if you got a pet, cat or a dog that's got a flea collar on, it's a Seresto collar. Get it off that animal and call your vet, especially if they've had any pet problems.
Ooh, I'll have to let my parents know about that. Yeah, they have a dog that I know is currently wearing a flea collar, so I'm hoping it's not that brand. That's pretty scary stuff right there.
It's the number one seller on Amazon, and they've $300 million alone on that one collar.
That was a terrifying number. What do you say, 1,000?
1,700. It's 1,700. It's 1,698. 1,700 pets have, and these are the reports that the EPA has received about this. So I imagine the number's a lot higher. And yeah, I can't quite figure out how in the world this product is not been, you know, either taken off the market or more regulated. But needless to say, the EPA has not weighed in on this. But obviously, yeah, that's not good. And I, you know, there's a lot of people out there. It's the number one for Amazon, and Yeah, I can only imagine how many pets have been killed by this. If that's the number that's been reported to the EPA, because I mean, when something happens, do you think of the first thing you call is the EPA?
No, of course not.
All right. So 952-946-6205. So check that out. Once again, the story's at USA Today. I'll post a link to that a little bit later on. The names of the snowplows are in, guys. We have for the Metro District, Patrick.
I saw.
Plowy McPlowface is the Metro area's new plow. I'm just going to plow right past you, is District 4's. District 1 is Duck Duck Orange Truck. Plow Bunyan. Yeah, that's a thumbs down right there.
Yeah.
Plow Bunyan is District 2. Snoby Juan Kenobi is District 6. I'm sorry.
What are these all dad jokes coming up with these names here?
Okay, this is one we did like the F. Salt Fitzgerald. I like that one.
See, that takes creativity. That one's good.
That's District 7. Darth Blader made it. Yes. Darth Blader is down in District 3.
I don't know what to think about. What do you get? Do you like that one?
I like Darth Blader.
You like Darth Blader?
All right. Of all the Star Wars ones, which, by the way, there is too many of them, and we got two of them on this list, I thought that was the best of them. The truck formerly known as Plow will be District 8's Plow. You got to keep these guys on a map. You have to have these where they're at. And once again, MnDOT, you've got to name that plow that drags behind the truck, Baby Got Back, and put speakers on the thing and play the Sir Mix-a-Lot classic every time you take that sucker out. Because it would just be surreal to be in like rural Minnesota and you're like here in the distance. What in the world? There it goes. I like big butts. I cannot deny.
You know, and I was just thinking, you know, in 10, 15 years when it comes time to retire these things, does that mean Snowy One Kenobi and Darth Blader have to duel it out in a demolition derby?
That would be a good idea. Okay. Would anyone survive that? I don't know. I think it's only 1 year. Are these permanent names?
I did not know that. I don't know.
What, do they send these trucks to retirement like you do with an old racehorse after they've used their lives up?
You got to take Plow Darth Blader out back and shoot him. It's done. He's
like Old Yeller.
He's old past his age. Plowy McPlowface needs to be put down. Well, I mean, yeah, okay. So Plowy McPlowface will be running around the Metro District. What do you bet that's a short straw sort of thing? Who gets to draw? Oh, thank God I don't have to drive that one today. I don't want to have every hipster driving past me trying to get a photo of, it's Plowy McPlowface! Woo! Woo! Instagram! TikTok!
Yeah, that's got to be whoever has the latest disciplinary violation has to drive that one.
Rookie drives Plowy McPlowface.
Yeah, I can see the new kid on the jump. All right! And then about a week later, oh, don't make me drive that again.
But I think they would all want to drive Baby Got Back. I think everyone would want to drive Baby Got Back.
I'd want to drive it.
I would drive it in a heartbeat. And that song would not get old. All right, so 952-946-6205. Brett, what do you have for us today?
Yeah, so today I wanted to talk about what's happening with indoor gatherings right now, especially that we're entering, I think, a really critical period when it comes to COVID right now. So the background I want to share first off is that I stream high school sports events during the winter, primarily hockey, but I also do some basketball as well. Talk a little bit about this on my old show, but basically what I do, I bring all the equipment to the games, whether that's the streaming computer, the camera, the headsets for the announcers, I bring these out to games, and we stream these for a number of teams around the metro area. Now, of course, being at these events, I have a chance to see how some of these indoor gatherings have worked right now. And I want to share some observations about it because, as I said, we're entering a really critical time right now with COVID, with cases dropping. And now we have Joe Biden saying that everyone should have access to a vaccine by the end of May, which is certainly good news. People want to move on. What do we have today? I think Texas Governor Greg Abbott just announced he's lifting all restrictions in his state. No mask.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah.
That is a bad idea.
Yeah, but as we get more of these vaccines rolling in and more people get vaccinated, the temptation is going to be there to start to resume somewhat normal life, especially at these indoor venues. Maybe not like at 100% capacity immediately, but I could picture in the next few months, maybe at the XL, we have some events at 50% capacity. Or Target Field with the Twins. I know they want 10,000 fans in the seats. So I wanted to share some thoughts of what I've seen at these sports events and how they might apply once we start to really scale things up. So at least on my end, when I'm out streaming games, Patrick, you can comment on this too, since you've been out announcing games with me. I follow the protocols. I usually set up all of our broadcast gear in the corner of an arena so we're away from everybody. We wear masks, always required for all of our announcers. Equipment stays sanitized, and that's at least my style. And from what I've seen of fans that attend these games or other events, for the most part, people are pretty good at actually following these protocols, especially during the games, whether it's sitting at distant seats, making sure they're wearing masks and such. For the most part, people do a pretty good job, but there are exceptions. Like I can think of one guy the other day at a basketball game I was doing. We had a referee who was telling the players just gently during a timeout, hey, make sure your mask is covering your nose. And of course, we get the guy yelling in the crowd going, referee the game, not the politics. You know, that typical line right there.
Shut up, you exactly. Ignorant bobo.
Exactly. And occasionally, you'll see some people that maybe have the mask slide below their nose. Those are serious violations, but it's not what has me most concerned about possibly scaling up some of these larger events and sports venues and so on and so on. What has me more concerned is what's going to happen not during the game, but before and after. Because if we look at that group, what's the name of that group that wants all athletes back to play in Minnesota? Like, Let Them Play, I think is the name of that group.
The Whiny, Petulant Children?
Exactly.
I think that's what it is,
yeah.
Yes. I think it's the Whiny, Petulant Children, yes.
Yeah, they often cite when they're putting out statistics, they talk about how during athletic competitions, we generally don't see any transmission of COVID. And they might technically be right about that in a way, but that's not what has me concerned about how COVID is being spread at these different events or sporting events and so on and so on. What has me more concerned is what's happening before and after games. Patrick, comment on this too, but this is like clockwork after every single hockey game I've been to in basketball. Immediately after the game is done, and people for the most part have been following the protocols, everyone always congregates in one area because they want to talk to their friends and neighbors. They want to talk to other family members. And people generally do that at sporting events. It's tempting. It's not necessarily, I don't think, because people are disobeying the rules on purpose. I think it's because it's something that's tempting to do when you're out in public. You want to talk to your friends and families who might have kids on the other team or kids of your teammates or your teammates.
Parents.
Yeah, you know where I'm going with that. Yeah. And that's what I think really has me worried, because I see this happen at every single game where people are gathering.
What about you, Patrick?
And I was going to say, this has been more of something I saw during football season, but you had a whole bunch of students standing out by the gate waiting for their players to come through, whether they're their boyfriend or their buddy they want to hang out with after the game. So you just get a lot of people just hanging out. And oh, Brett said something, you know, he's talked about it happening in the indoor arenas, and I ran into it a couple weeks ago where people were just kind of hanging out in the arena concourse after the game, and I'm kind of asking myself, I thought they weren't allowed to do this, but nobody was telling them, hey, you guys got to go out in
just
the parking
lot. Just go outside, yeah. I've got three different things, and Patrick, I think you and Brett, you both probably remember me talking about this. Baseball was the first one. And it depended. I mean, our team did a pretty good job. My kid played city ball in Hopkins, and you know, it, for the most part, it was good until we got into kind of like July, and then all of a sudden we'd go into the stands, and I think things started wearing down, and all of a sudden there was a group of kids, and I'm like, wow, look at all these kids hanging out with each other. That's not a good idea. But then on top of it, the parents would all they pull all their lawn chairs together.
Exactly.
And they're, how are you doing? Now, this is during the game. Now, the kids are all lined up on the field, you know, down the first base or the third baseline or the first baseline. They're not there and, you know, not really. They're obeying the rules, but it's just the parents weren't. The second experience I had was volleyball. My daughter wanted to play volleyball, so she tried out, actually made one of the teams at her school. That was actually a pretty... Now, this is before things shut down at the end of November. It was in fall sports. It was remarkable how much things did shut down because they were controlled, rather. You came in, they tested your temperature, hand sanitizer. If you're fine, you were able to go sit down. They had very specific areas where you could sit, that you watched the game. You could, cheer and stuff like that, but that was pretty much it. And you couldn't interact with the team or the player, your own player. You got up and you left and you waited out in your car for your player to come out to the car. That actually was great. I there were a few times I saw the teams were kind of congregating a little bit, but I was a little concerned. But for the most part, all the kids had masks on. Even when they're coming off the court, they put a mask on. That was actually well done. Right now, my kids are in soccer, and they're not on playing games, but they're doing practices in domes across the metro. And it depends on the facility, but pretty much we can't go in and watch. Your parents can't go in and watch. As a matter of fact, on one dome, they made us drop off a good 300 yards away from the dome. You could not get closer to the dome. You had to drop off there. The kid went down and then came back up, and that was it. So they got checked in and they went. Now, they're saying they're wearing masks and stuff like that, but at the same time, it comes down. And if they're visiting with some of their friends, I mean, that's part of it. But I it is a mixed bag. And when you get people that push this idea of there's no problem, oh, we're careful, but then you see the real truth of it is, no, they're not careful. They're not being, they're not basically doing this. They're the first ones who are screaming, allow us to do this, we'll be careful. You point out the fact that when both of you have seen them congregating after the game, there's like, oh, who's being the social distancing police now? Oh, are you going to regulate us? Yeah. You said we could do this safely. We followed your rules, and now you don't want to follow them. That's just insanity.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like what's going to happen as we start opening up more of these indoor venues as the months continue and more people get vaccinated, we're only going to see these nice pictures of people in the stands sitting socially distanced, wearing masks, and the narrative will be, well, look at how great we're doing with all of these indoor events. And we're not talking about what's happening before and after. And I think that's really where we're going to have the problem. And we got to get this stuff figured out. Like you were talking about that one venue with volleyball where, yeah, you are in only if you take your temperature. You have to be wearing a mask.
You could only be in there for the game your kid played.
Mm-hmm.
That was another thing. So literally the entire crowd left. The new crowd came in and they watched a new game. And so unless you had a kid on that team, you could not watch the game. No, that's the thing is there are just people, and I get it. We all want to go back to normal. But North Dakota, they opened up the UND and North Dakota State. There wasn't any regulation at all. And they said that, my son who's at the U, he said apparently the rumor is pretty much if you're at the university, you pretty much presume you've had it because there was just so no regulations. How many people died because of that? People going back to home to visit parents and getting them sick. And it's really kind of a scary point. Patrick, you had something else on that?
I was just going to add on a little bit to if there's no standardization to when you go to an arena, some have stricter regulations than others. I've had my temperature checked at a couple of venues that I've attended this winter. I've had other venues who said, even though you're announcing the game, we're not going to let you in until it's time for you to go up there. And there are other places where they're basically like, come on in, and there's really nothing.
It is scary, especially, in Texas, what they're doing, I don't know, you can see what's going on in Texas. A, they're trying to take the nightmare of their electric grid off the front headlines. B, he's trying to open up for spring break. And C, he knows a lot of people are about to get, the Democrats are about to get a lot of people some money. And so he's saying, come on down to Texas. Now, if you're dumb enough to go to a Texas where you can't trust the power and the water, well, good luck with all that. Keep your money local. You get this check, but take a vacation in Minnesota and keep the money in state. That's the way you should think about it. But that's really your game plan is expecting Joe Biden and the Democrats to bail you out.
Yeah,
that's what it is. That's your game plan is that when this eventually goes south, that the Democrats will come help us.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to go back to the sports one more time, I can't stand watching sports without crowds. I didn't enjoy watching the Twins last season. Well, the Vikings, they weren't any good anyway, so that wasn't too much fun to watch. But yeah, I want to have crowds back at sports events, at these stadiums, at arenas, but it's got to be done safely, and we can't just focus only on what's happening during the games. It's before and after where I think we are going to have some problems, and we got to make sure these protocols are put in place, because I imagine as we're going to start opening up these arenas and these venues, the focus is only going to be on what's happening during the games, when for the most part people are following it.
Flo is in Minneapolis. Let's bring her on in here. Welcome on in, Flo. Thanks for holding.
Hi. How you doing?
All right, Flo. How are you doing?
Yes.
I got an action alert for all of your listeners. As you know, the University of Minnesota has a board of regents. There are four openings. They are nominated for 6-year staggered terms, one for each congressional district, and four at large. And I'm particularly interested in your listeners being aware that one of the openings is in the 4th Congressional District, which is basically St. Paul.
Yes.
Joint committees, both in the House and Senate, in the state legislature, the higher education committees met and made their recommendations for finalists for the four openings, two for each. And the St. Paul nominee is the first in history Native American nominated to serve on the Board of Regents.
About darn time.
His name is Brendan Alkire, Alkire. And he is Standing Rock Sioux. And so it will be coming for a vote by the full legislature. So everyone should call their state representative in the House and their state senator on the Senate side in their legislative district and urge them to support the 4th District recommendation of Brendan Alkire.
Flo, I'm going to step on in here, a little off topic. Thank you very much. I'll talk a little bit about this when I come on back. Brett, did you hear the news?
Well, I'm with you, though. I mean, first Native American, long overdue. Yeah.
I'm going to bet there's going to be some issues from the Republican Senate.
Oh, they'll find something.
Yes, I think we're going to find a few there. But, maybe enough votes will be there because I know that there are senators that are representing, Republican senators that represent Native American areas, and that maybe they don't want to, they don't want to upset the Native American vote as much as they would by just turning it down because they don't like the Native American candidate. But I've seen too much from Republicans lately that leads me to believe that's not going to be an easy vote. We'll have to see.
They'll find a reason.
Well, let's see if we can figure it out. Brett, we're done with time. We don't have enough time to finish out that thought process. Brett Johnson, thanks, Brett. I appreciate
it. Absolutely.
Thanks, Patrick, as well. Let's take a break. Come on back. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Joe, thank you very much. I appreciate that call. But you got to get through the Senate, and you can call these people. But once again, They've got all the Republicans are on a leash. You know, I'll be the first to say that, you know, sometimes I think it's amazing that the Democrats can't get their party to work in the same direction nearly as effectively as the Republicans. But at the same time, I look at the Republicans and I say, oh, dear Lord, you know, you have no leeway. And I mean, what that is at the beginning of the session, you know, let's take a look at the national or the Senate Republicans. You know, Mitch McConnell sits down with Susan Collins and the rest of them and says, you're going to vote yes on this, yes on this, yes on this, yes on this. I'll let you think about voting against something like this. But the reality is that we need your vote. You're going to vote yes on that as well. And there's no problem. And that's how they do it. And so my guess is there's going to be all of a sudden, I don't know about this, the first one ever. Why don't we have another old white guy? And that's going to be probably their argument, but we'll have to find out. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Yeah, the Texas thing we mentioned in that last talk segment, one of the things I want to bring up about that, it is Texas, the Abbott, the governor down there, trying to get their disastrous electrical grid story off the headlines. That is as well trying to get things ready to go for spring break. But it also is these Republicans who have been fighting these checks are knowing that these checks are going to come. And so they're preparing themselves to basically try to take as much of that money as they can for their own state. And the question I have for you is this. If you are in Minnesota, you have had Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith fighting in the Senate for you to get these checks. And without Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith, those checks would not be happening. There are a lot of local businesses. I'm not going to be like the Republican Party of Minnesota who ran over and had a convention or a weekend gathering in South Dakota and gave them our money. I can tell you there probably was some businesses here in the state of Minnesota that would have used that money well. I'm going to spend my money locally because you don't get the economy back up and running by taking your money and going to Orlando or taking your money and going to San Diego. You get your economy going back up by going out to great local businesses and paying, you know, paying for their services, whatever that might be. So if you're looking for a car, Rudy Luther Toyota. You're looking for, Zero Res, go get your carpets cleaned, go over to Park Tavern, get yourself a burger, you know, go to Eat Local Minnesota, all the restaurants there, they'll all have you set on up. The School of Rock, how about some music? Go spend your money over there. Northern Sun, who have been with us forever. Northern Sun, Minuteman Press, I can go through the list. Lots of great local businesses. Spend your money. Then that money really has impact because then you're basically giving part of your money to local people who then go spend it on other things. Ta-da! Magical. Don't let Texas steal our money. You know, keep it here local. And you know, unless, you know, you're Ted Cruz, you want to go to Cancun, but that dude, what a sack of rocks. 952-946-6205, Minnesota coronavirus update. And also I'll get to that North Dakota story when I do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is indeed the Matt McNeil Show. Speaking of rock, by the way, how about thank you, Todd Colet, sponsoring AM 950 this week. His band, Just Folk, has a brand new song, A Hard Winter. I have posted it on the social media pages. Go take a look at it. It's on YouTube. A Hard Winter from Just Folk. Thank you very much, Todd. If you'd like to sponsor the radio station for a week, give us a call, 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885. Let us get to the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. State health officials reported on Tuesday that 53% of Minnesota seniors have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. Yay. They hope to get that number up to 70% by the end of the month in order to move on to the next phase of vaccination that includes essential workers such as manufacturing, public transit workers, as well as adults with underlying medical conditions such as sickle cell disease, Down syndrome, obesity, and type 2 diabetes. A total of 908,590 Minnesotans have received at least one dose, with 472,789 getting the two dose recommended for the vaccine's use. This week, the one-dose Johnson & Johnson Vaccine is expected to arrive in Minnesota. Another 443 confirmed cases announced on Tuesday. The pandemic total now 485,655. Testing volume was low with 10,915 reports made to the state health official on Monday, reflecting the lower testing volume on the weekends. Four more people have passed away from coronavirus complications. The number of COVID-19 related fatalities has dropped significant in Minnesota, with 284 deaths reported in February, a 68% decrease from the 877 deaths we had in January. December saw the highest number of deaths with 1,729. Thanks, Republican Party of Minnesota, for downplaying it for the entire September and October, which led to the god-awful November and December. Thank you. You're partially responsible for that number. That accounted for 27% of the 6,490 fatalities since the pandemic was first detected in the state 1 year ago. About 63% of the deaths have been among residents of long-term care facilities. The number of Minnesotans hospitalized with COVID-19 complications remained at 243 on Monday, but there were 57 patients in intensive care units, a one-day increase of 9 of about 10,000 patients studied the Minnesota Department of Health over the course of the pandemic, 76% of those admitted had at least one underlying health condition, including hypertension, obesity, diabetes, heart conditions, chronic lung disease. So that gets you the update on that. The University of Minnesota Medical School has received a $1 million to study whether a widely used generic medicine could be effective treatment for COVID-19. Early research suggests metformin, an inexpensive drug used for diabetes and weight loss, can help women infected with the pandemic virus avoid serious illness. The U launched a small study of the concept late last year, and the research in effort now can expand to include more than 1,000 patients. Even as vaccines spread, doctors say the search for effective COVID-19 treatments remains important, since they don't expect the virus that causes the disease will be eradicated. We don't have accessible, available, cheap, safe, early outpatient treatment options for COVID, said Dr. Carolyn Bramanti, an assistant professor of internal medicine and pediatrics at the medical school. This is one of the first studies to look at that. In December, U researchers published results showing that the use of metformin was linked to significantly reduced risk of COVID-19 death in women. So that's the first time I've heard of anything like that, where we had a medicine that might actually help one of the sexes in this fight against COVID-19. I have not heard that before, but, you know, and as they said, this is going to be one of those things. There's going to be a lot of learning going on with this. Right now, we're all looking like we're going to get vaccinated fairly soon. As I think Joe Biden was saying that he wants to get done by May here. We might be able to do that with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But doesn't mean some people are not going to get sick. Doesn't mean that some idiots are not going to get vaccinated. That's all right, but they're stupid. My God, I can't believe that we're still at this point where after 100 years of expanding life because of vaccines and being able to treat people, all of a sudden people are like, hey, no! All right. That's your right. Don't have to respect it, but that's your right. Needless to say, there's also variants that are changing of coronavirus. I'm not sure. I mean, will this be something eventually where we have to have a regular shot to get to a point where we're going to be clear of this? I don't know. We'll have to see, but obviously a lot of investigation still going on into it. But nah, we're hopeful. Hope is a good thing. Hope is a very good thing. So remember earlier when I was talking about cancel culture? You remember how I was saying that not only is it a way for Republicans and conservatives to not ever have to say I'm sorry for saying stuff that's just obscene, ignorant, outright lies, just plain stupid, evil. They'll say something like that, and then when someone criticizes them, and it's like, it's cancel culture. No, you're just an idiot, and you just don't want to say I'm sorry, or boy, I shouldn't have said that. And we also talked a little bit about how they try to take cancel culture and they desperately want to attach it to Dr. Seuss, where there's no cancel culture on Dr. Seuss. But by doing so, then they can take their fringe, you know, stupidity and try to make it mainstream by saying he got cancel culture too. That's what that's all about. Well, I have zero doubt we're about to get that from North Dakota because, oh, my God. Okay. Oh, my God. Are we ready? Buckle up. You got your seatbelt on? All right. Tray in the upright position. A North Dakota state representative is facing growing calls to step down over allegations he's repeatedly sexually harassed staff members and interns. Now one of his Republican colleagues has come forward, revealing she was forced to move her seat in the House chamber floor to escape his harassment. Note, this is a fellow Republican saying this. In a Saturday statement, Representative Emily O'Brien, a Republican from Grand Forks, said the inappropriate behavior by Representative Luke Simmons, Republican from Dickinson, became so bad that her colleagues had to help her relocate to a desk further away from him. The move was made under the pretense that my pregnancy required closer proximity to a restroom than addressing his harassing behavior, she explained. Mine is just one of many instances that were handled by avoiding the real issue. If you have endured similar harassment, now is the time to speak up, and now is the time to demand action. O'Brien is among several people who have accused Simmons of inappropriate behavior dating back to 2017, a 14-page file released by the Legislative Council, the research arm of the state legislature, outlined the many allegations against the, they say outspoken, I'm going to say douchey, Republican, including testimony from one council committee who described Simmons as really creepy. I just get this mental impression of North Dakotans. How'd you describe the guy? He's real creepy. Oh, okay, we'll put that down. Real creepy, you say. Okay, gotcha. He was also accused by staff members and interns of repeatedly making sexual advances towards them. Ugh. Have you seen a picture of this guy? Ugh. Talking about shopping for thongs with women. Okay, wait a minute. Stop. You're in North Dakota, and you're trying to play off the story that you're shopping for thongs. Hey, Elwin there. Hey, the field's looking pretty good there. You got, you gonna do some more harvesting a little bit later on? Yeah, I am. How you doing? I'm doing fine. Hey, Elwin, is that a new thong I see you wearing over there? That's a pretty sporty model there. Where'd you get down to the old Bismarck Thongs R Us there and enjoy the 2-for-1 discount I see? Oh, yeah. When I'm harvesting here in the upper tier, I sure like a thong because it breathes. End scene. It's creepy because I just can't believe he would actually think this is something you actually think you can get away with in North Dakota, that you can tell people that you've gone to the thong store, which is there even a thong store in North Dakota? There you go. Oh gosh, it's a cool breeze coming in here now. He even giving one per employee a shoulder massage. Yikes. In an interview with the Grand Forks Herald, O'Brien said Simmons sat behind her while the House was in session and would comment on her appearance almost every day. Every couple of days, he'd walk by and give me an up-down, she said, adding that Simmons, I'm going to presume that's a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Adding that Simmons would say that she must be a good secretary for her boss. He would say, you're lucky your boss lets you come out here to work. Holy crud! This is a representative talking to another representative, and he uses the term, you must be a good secretary for her boss, with the creepy sexual vibe. Eee. You're lucky your boss lets you come out here to work. O'Brien, who was first elected to the North Dakota House of Representatives in 2016, added that Simmons would ask her who was doing the dishes and laundry at her home while she was at work, since those chores were her responsibility. Can I punch this guy? Patrick, can we check my contract? Am I allowed to punch North Dakota? I know I can't punch anyone here. Can I punch a North Dakota representative? Is that something?
I'll have to look through it. I'll have PR get back to you.
Appendix
on that.
G. Okay, check Appendix G. I'm not going to punch anyone. But dear Lord. God, this guy needs to get his ass kicked. To avoid the unwanted attention, she started pretending to be on the phone when he would walk by and stopped wearing at least one dress. Ultimately, she decided she had to change seats. The legislative council report on the allegations against Simmons was released last week after he cursed out two Democratic lawmakers who asked him to wear a face mask. According to the Grand Forks Herald, Simmons told Representative Carla Rose Hansen, Democrat from Fargo, to F off, and I'm editing that. This is a House rep talking to another House rep, and insisted, "You're not my effing mother," after she asked him to wear a face covering amid the coronavirus pandemic. Simmons has since apologized for the outburst, insisting that as a Christian, I don't condone that kind of language. You suck at being Christian, Simmons. You suck at being Christian. And you do use that language. So by your own admission, you're not a really good Christian. God, you suck, dude. State House leaders on Friday. This is a Republican doing this, and his own party is getting tired of him. State House leaders on Friday officially called for his resignation, with House Majority Leader Chet Pollard saying in a statement that Simmons' subsequent actions show a pattern of behavior that we do not tolerate and that violates our rules against workplace harassment. While we have previously worked with various individuals to resolve issues with Representative Simmons' inappropriate behavior, it is clear further action must be taken, Pollard said, calling on the lawmaker to step down. Should he refuse, the legislature will weigh all the information and options, including expulsion, and make a determination when we can reconvene after crossover. We want to make clear that his behavior will not be accepted at the legislature. While Simmons did not immediately respond to the Daily Beast request for comment, he told the Bismarck Tribune that they were trying to frame me and had no comment on the calls for his resignation. Cancel culture! Right? Simmons was elected in 2017 and is currently a member of the controversial Bastide Caucus in the State House. What are these clowns? Bastide Caucus. The Bastard Caucus? That's kind of, as advertised, I guess. The lawmaker has repeatedly insisted the accusations against our political plot targeting is conservative politics. Everybody, say it with me. 1, 2, 3. Cancel culture. Please. What it has turned into is an agenda against my character. Dude, you're a jackass. That's your character. These are accusations that have come to me that simply just are not true. They've taken my words and distorted them into very, very sick concepts that just aren't true, Simmons said in a Thursday press release. Stating he knows exactly how Judge Kavanaugh feels now. God. Oh, my God. I have made political enemies because I am very conservative voting record, and I do not apologize for my conservative record. I will not back off and not of that one bit, but because this has nothing to do with your voting record. It's because you're an absolute jackass. But because they can't beat me in facts, and because we are getting a lot of ground in the North Dakota Capitol, they have to attack your character, and that's exactly what's happening. Now, let's just. He would ask her if he was doing the dishes, who was doing the dishes and laundry at her home as she was at work, because those chores were her responsibility. Wow. Good secretary for her boss. He's talking to another House rep, a Republican House rep. This is someone from his own party. God. Yeah. It's amazing to see. The one thing I feel as if is that it would not ever get that bad here in Minnesota. Although I'll tell you what, we've had some cases where, you know, there was the one guy that threatened Jamie Becker Finn after a vote in the anti-chamber room that where he had to be separated from her. But, I mean, apparently he got a pretty stern talking to after that, that's not acceptable. It sounds like yesterday, what was it, Representative Combo Platter, Mortensen, who doxed J.B. Becker Finn, he's probably going to get an ethics complaint against him and probably have to apologize. But I don't think it would ever get I would hope it would never get this bad. But it just shows you how far right the Republican Party is in North Dakota that after the first case of this, the first thing, how in the world you're not throwing this guy out, I don't know. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Wrap up the show. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. It's time for our daily intake of white Republican men in outstate Minnesota trying to force Minneapolis to do what they want. Let's take a look. A state ban on rent control passed the Senate Labor Government Policy Committee on a voice vote on Tuesday, with Democratic Farm Labor members calling for the legislature to respect local control. Well, you know, because once again, isn't it Republicans? Get your nose out of my district. Oh, that's right. They don't care when it's Minneapolis. The Republicans screaming Minneapolis has to be stopped from self-destruction. Well, then if you stop doing what you're doing, we should be just fine. Because you idiots, you boneheaded freaking Republican morons out in rural Minnesota, who, by the way, take Minneapolis's tax dollars into your district because you don't have enough money locally to pay for your own damn bills. You guys, if we went with your ideas, it'd be a freaking nightmare. Good thing this will all die in the House. So it's not like you're wasting all your time right now. The bill, authored by Rich Dreiheim of Madison Lake, oh yes, that grand metropolitan area, who chairs the Senate Housing and Finance Policy Committee, is also a landlord real estate agent. He argued that rent control discourages developers from building. No, it doesn't. It prevents from basically housing apartment complexes from becoming only for wealthy people in large swaths of a city. But that's apples, oranges sort of thing. Well, actually, I'm right. The study, considered by the University of Minnesota Center for Urban and Regional Affairs and presented by the Minneapolis City Council on Tuesday, disputes that rent control would inhibit development or reduce the quality of housing, but did say apartments may be converted into condominiums. But needless to say, the University of Minnesota did a study and basically said horse crap to all the Republican arguments. I love this, Carla Bingham from DFL from Cottage Grove. We have a creepy fixation against Minneapolis this session. I don't know how to get around that other than continue to speak out. We have other issues than this fixation. Tori Westrom, once again, white guy that's not from Minneapolis, pushed back saying Senate was trying to save Minneapolis. No, you're not. You guys hate Minneapolis. You guys hate Minneapolis. This is only about basically trying to create talking points for your district saying, I got those Minneapolis police people under control. I went down there and told those black people, I mean Minneapolis people, that I'm in charge. That's what I did. That's all these people are doing. But there is an interesting point to the story. There are some states that have imposed some rent control. In California instituted rent stabilization last year, which restricts landlords to increasing rent from increasing rent more than 5% plus the local rate of inflation each year. Well, wait a minute here. All right, Matt's Math Corner. All right, if I got $1,000 rent, which is pretty cheap rent, all right, and that's times 12 months, okay, that gets me up to $12,000, times that 0.05, which would be 5%, I can still raise the rent every year $600 plus inflation. What are your problem here? The landlords are still going to be able to make money. And that's every year. That's every stinking year. They can raise that money. I don't. I mean, this is clearly all the Republicans are doing right now is basically trying to create talking points for the 2022 election, where they say we white Republicans told those black people in Minneapolis what to do. That's what it is all about. Native Roots up next. Till tomorrow. See ya.